It's Tuesday, July 7th. What would you say if I told you the virus can spread farther than 6 feet? We start here. Some of our most important policies on COVID-19 have been built around the idea it's not truly airborne. Well, a group of scientists is asking officials to take another look.
Just think of that as smaller particles travel farther distance, linger longer in the air.
What we know, what we don't, and how it could all affect your life. The one good thing you could say about the pandemic was at least crime is down.
Shot and killed a baby. And it wasn't one shooter, there were at least two shooters.
Why major cities are now experiencing a surge in shootings. And it's the fantasy of any presidential campaign lagging in the polls. What if the Electoral College went rogue?
They can police their electors.
The Supreme Court just gave your state the power to wrangle its representatives. We'll break down how that could play out in November. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. Viruses are kind of difficult to wrap your mind around, not just because they're so small, but because there's always this push and pull between what's been proven and what just seems kind of obvious. Before that proof arrives, though, what seems obvious to one person might not seem that way to another.
There's no need to really be fearful about it. I mean, we can talk about the different steps that individuals can take, that we're going to take statewide. But at the end of the day, this is something that's been around for quite some time.
Yesterday, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis insisted that even as his state sees as many infections per day as New York was seeing at the worst point of April, Floridians have nothing to fear.
And we're averaging, I think, over the past week, I think it's like 60 to 65,000 test results a day coming in.
It's obvious to him. More testing, more positive cases. But scientists say if you look at the numbers, it is obvious that's not the whole story. In Mississippi, Governor Tate Reeves says it's obvious looking at graphs that mass protests are a big part of the spread. They came right before the surge. Except his own public health department says when you talk to doctors, that is not what they're seeing at all. When they're speaking to patients, they're largely young people who have just come back from a bar or a barbecue. Well, recently, several members of the scientific community have started sounding the alarm on something they say is becoming more and more obvious, something that could change what we think we know about how this virus spreads. But this theory is not proven, and these scientists are begging health authorities to make clear what we do know and what we don't. So forget the politics, forget the policy goals. I want to start today by getting you the absolute clearest information on how COVID-19 is spreading, how you can protect yourself. ABC's chief medical correspondent, Dr. Jennifer Ashton, is here. And Dr. Ashton, I feel like most people already think of this virus as quote-unquote airborne, but these scientists are saying it is worse than we thought. Why?
So let me take you into the world a little bit of aerosol science, Brad. These are super brilliant people that all they do is study the biology, chemistry, and physics of pathogens, how they move and travel in the air. So basically some terminology. Respiratory droplets imply larger particles. They come out of your mouth when you cough or sneeze, and they're so large that they basically don't linger in the air for that long. They kind of drop to the floor. So we're talking about transmission via close, prolonged contact, within 6 feet apart, let's say.
We're having to watch and make sure that people aren't drinking too much because, once they tend to start drinking, they let their guard down and, it's easier to start getting closer and closer and closer together.
Aerosol or airborne transmission, just think of that as smaller particles travel farther distance, linger longer in the air. So what we've seen happen now is some controversy erupting in the world of science.
Transmission of COVID-19 is through droplets. It is not airborne. Therefore, someone who has these small liquid particles that come out of their mouth, they travel a certain distance and then they fall.
Hoping you can break down this warning we're seeing now from more than 200 scientists around the world to the WHO, saying basically they want the WHO to take this idea that airborne transmission is more serious than the WHO has been admitting. They say it's
what's happening now is scientists from all over the world are really petitioning the World Health Organization to change their ruling because they are such a powerful global health and scientific body.
Yeah, so I think the evidence on this is pretty good, and the scientists are right. And WHO, I think, is just being way too slow on this.
The issue, and George, the reason they want this virus deemed airborne, in addition to respiratory droplet transmission, is because it has implications on how we can protect ourselves and the guidelines and recommendations we can make to the general public to try to slow the spread of this virus.
And the implication is people should be wearing masks when they're indoors, even if they're socially distanced from each other.
Yeah, it all takes us back to the same place. Masks are just mandatory now.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dr. Janet, like, if this is true, if this does spread in these tinier droplets, so making it essentially airborne, and we can talk about, you know, that's still an if, but if that's true, that would have, like, huge repercussions to anyone who's, like, what, showing back up to work and, like, air conditioning.
Potentially, that's right. And it could have implications for recommendations about even wearing face coverings or masks in a more widespread way indoors. Now, again, we have to underscore here, according to the CDC and the World Health Organization and leading virologists, this virus can spread any number of ways. It still can spread via surface contact. You know, if you shake someone's hand and then you rub your eyes, nose, or mouth, you could get sick that way.
State capitol in Sacramento was closed today after Assemblywoman Autumn Burke and four others tested positive for COVID-19.
Respiratory droplets, yes. Aerosolized particles / airborne, maybe / probably.
She claims she had mask-to-mask exposure to the virus in June and tested positive over the weekend.
But here's the bottom line, Brad. When people hear these different routes of transmission, they have to be able to distinguish between just the virus can travel there or live there, or can it actually infect us and make us sick there? They're two different things.
Oh, that's helpful. That just because it can move, if you're getting nervous all of a sudden that you know this virus could find its way over to where you are, across a room or across a building, that doesn't necessarily mean that same particle will make you sick.
Exactly, because you're talking about something called an infectious dose, and you need to have enough of that virus wherever you're talking about, whether it's on a surface, on your hand, on a doorknob, or lingering in the air or in an air conditioning vent, to actually infect us. And we don't know what the infectious dose of this virus is yet.
Well, and so bottom line then, if this is true, and if is a big thing, and the World Health Organization is actually going to hold a press conference later today to describe what they do know, what they don't. If this is a thing, wouldn't that mean that instead of wearing those loose cloth masks, people working around other strangers might have to wear those N95 masks that filter out tiny, tiny particles? Or you might see fewer people wanting to work indoors with strangers. Or airlines, air travel. This could have a profound impact on people being in enclosed spaces. Could this have an impact on your life at work or what you should be talking to your boss about?
Well, I don't think anyone knows the answer to that. I don't want people to be frightened or shocked if they hear all of a sudden, oh, this is aerosolized or airborne as well.
I was home alone. I was 22. I am 22. I didn't think this would affect me in any way. And then here I am laying in bed. I can't breathe. I'm scared to fall asleep because I don't know if I fall asleep, I don't know if I'm going to wake up.
We still have to take, you know, common sense precautions and control the things that we can control and understand that there's a difference, as we said, between finding it in the air and the infectious dose necessary to make someone sick. And we don't know that yet.
And if you're wondering, why is the World Health Organization getting peppered on this and the CDC, the U.S.'s version of the health authority, is not? It's this international conglomeration of scientists. They are looking to this group that has the wherewithal to inform lots of countries around the world, and still nothing yet. Jen Ashton keeping us in the loop. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Early on in the pandemic, police officials were worried. Times of uncertainty can put everyone on edge, so you can see chaos, you can see crime. Well, in March and April, we weren't seeing that. In fact, crime in most major cities went down. Well, in the last several weeks, that has changed, particularly with violent crime.
Violent morning in New York City. From midnight to 9 a.m., there were 21 shootings with 37 victims.
And a 7-year-old girl was killed while playing outside with other children in Chicago, where 75 people were shot this weekend.
Cities like Chicago, Atlanta, New York have seen some of their deadliest weekends in years recently. And if that's not unsettling enough, a growing number of victims in these cities are children.
You shot and killed a baby. And it wasn't one shooter. There were at least two shooters. An 8-year-old baby.
So what's changed and what can be done about it? John Cohen is a former official of the Department of Homeland Security, where he specialized in counterterror and law enforcement. He's now an ABC News contributor. And so, John, why are we seeing this increase? Because, like, police have always said, you know, you might see more violence in the summer, but it looked for a while like criminals are scared of COVID, too. Everyone's going to stay home. What's changed?
Well, Brad, typically we do see an increase in violent crime during the summer months. More people are out on the street. There's more people that are outside, you know, partying. More gang members are on the street. There's open air drug selling. And so those are all circumstances that can lead to acts of violence, particularly in large cities.
Where a 29-year-old man was shot and killed on a busy street Sunday night. A short while later, three more got shot. And then in East Harlem, a 15-year-old got shot in the chest.
What's compounding it now is that you have had people who were closed in because of the COVID crisis who are now out.
Coronavirus is kind of like going around scaring a lot of people right now. Definitely people are on edge.
There is an increase in people who've lost their jobs. We're seeing increases in substance abuse. We've seen increases in domestic violence.
Owner Dennis Lynn says gun sales are double what they would usually be right now.
So all those factors are coming together, and the result is we're seeing an increase, a dramatic increase in violent crime, particularly in major cities.
With a number of Atlanta police officers who feel abandoned by their city and its leaders, we're calling in sick overnight.
And we've also seen police officers backing off. In some cases, we have fewer police officers on the street because of the public health crisis. But we're also experiencing a major national debate on race and policing.
The morale is bad right now.
And you know, I've heard from a number of chiefs that that is resulting in police officers being less aggressive as far as dealing with gang members.
But wait, why would the job of police change in this? Like, if you see someone get shot, like, you still go arrest the shooter, right, John?
That's right. But the way you prevent violent crime from occurring is you typically surge police officers in those neighborhoods where the violent crime tends to occur. And that violent crime tends to occur in lower income communities of color.
Sequoria Turner was shot near here, outside the Wendy's parking lot, where 27-year-old Rayshard Brooks was killed at the hands of a white police officer last month.
You know, the traditional policing approach is to saturate neighborhoods where violence is occurring with large numbers of police officers, visible presence on the street, targeting gang members, targeting violent drug traffickers.
People with long guns have taken over the restaurant and the street in front of it, and police let it happen.
But in today's environment, particularly when you have neighborhoods telling the police, we don't want you here.
The loud pop was not from leftover fireworks. Authorities report a bullet went right through the front windshield of this marked police cruiser.
Police agencies are hesitant, and police officers are hesitant to use those traditional strategies.
And activists, of course, have said, we do want police in our neighborhoods if they can keep from escalating situations, particularly with unarmed individuals. But, John, I thought it was interesting. Bill de Blasio, the very liberal mayor of New York, he basically said he blamed this on the pandemic, but because he said the courts are no longer prosecuting criminals. They're not throwing the bad guys behind bars. And his own police force is saying you're also letting criminals out of jail. But I thought that was like the nonviolent ones. So what's the problem there?
Yeah, you often hear about, particularly when we're talking about the release of people who are in jail, that they're only releasing nonviolent offenders. Well, people who are incarcerated because they were prosecuted for a nonviolent offense may actually have a long record of violent behavior. So they're releasing people who have been incarcerated for the crime that they've been convicted for, but that isn't necessarily a good representation of the type of person or the level of...
Like you catch a super scary dude who sells drugs and shoots people, but you caught him with the drugs. So like that's the easy conviction.
Right. You may have somebody in jail who was prosecuted for being in possession for 5 pounds of marijuana, and that's what they were convicted of. But they may have a long history of violence that wasn't a part of the prosecution, but it still is a reflection of the person's personality and behavior. They are a violent person. They just may not have been convicted of a violent offense.
As part of Georgia's declared state of emergency, the governor is calling up 1,000 troops to help local police. He explains that the peaceful protests have been hijacked by criminals.
Brad, there are effective ways to deal with violent crime, and it involves local law enforcement working with local communities to address the issues facing those communities. You're going to hear people talking about calling in the National Guard or even the military. That's the wrong answer. That would be a huge mistake. Military and National Guardsmen, as well-trained as they are to conduct military operations, they're not trained to police our cities. Those calls are misplaced, and this really would be a recipe for disaster.
That's an important movement that's happening. But this random Wild Wild West shoot 'em up because you can? It's gotta stop.
Yeah, it does sound like, you know, it's driven by the pandemic, but it's also this uneasy relationship right now between cities, their police forces, and their citizens that's creating this kind of unprecedented ecosystem. John Cohen, thank you so much.
Talk to you soon, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, you can vote for whomever you want unless you're one of the 538 people listed in the Constitution. More after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
In a regular year, the Supreme Court would be done issuing opinions for its term. Its big decisions would all be over. Well, yesterday, for the first time in a generation, the Supreme Court issued decisions in July.
Just months before the presidential election, the U.S. Supreme Court is telling electors in the Electoral College that they can't go rogue.
And guess what? It's got several more big ones still on the way. ABC senior Washington reporter Devin Dwyer is back with us, as he's been, because, Devin, just another lots of cases to go over this term. Can we talk about the Electoral College first, because there are some real implications here for the November election, right?
Yeah, a major case yesterday, Brad, involving a handful of electors. Those are the members of the Electoral College that actually do the picking for the next president of the United States.
We have received 8 votes for Hillary Clinton for president.
Yes.
And 1 ballot which cannot be received.
And these electors were so-called faithless electors. They went rogue in 2016, if you will. They acted like free agents.
Colorado's Electoral College supposed to cast 9 votes for Hillary Clinton today, but there was a holdout.
For this vote for John Kasich, Michael Baca could face a fine and or jail time.
Here's the states, Washington and Colorado, wanted to crack down on them, impose monetary fines, in some cases remove these electors. And the Supreme Court yesterday said that those states are in the right.
And there are all these states doing what Colorado is doing. Why not just leave it to them?
They can police their electors, even though the Constitution says that electors will do the picking of the president.
The elector who had promised to vote for the winning candidate could suddenly say, you know, I'm going to vote for Frodo Baggins.
And you're right. It does have a significant impact, potentially, on the degree of chaos, if you will, that we could face later this year, especially if the election is very close.
Hey, the other ruling I liked, Devin, was the one on robocalls. Just because I hate robocalls is really what I... But like, I barely understand what the ruling's saying besides robocalls are bad, right? What is the court saying?
Well, here's a ruling everybody can get behind, right? I mean, this was a unanimous ruling. The Supreme Court upheld federal law from 1991 that bans robocalls to your cell phone and to your home phone, even though somehow, Brad, I feel like a lot of these guys actually get through on the line anyways. But the Supreme Court said that remains against the law and, in fact, went a step further, expanded the rules banning robocalls to your cell phone now to include government debt collectors. There had been a special carve-out.
Oh, so it's already not okay for private folks, but now even the government debt collectors can't even get on your case.
That's right. Pollsters.
Political consultants and pollsters were among those asking the Supreme Court to strike down the 1991 law that bars them from making robocalls to cell phones as a violation of their free speech rights.
Other commercial interests have not been allowed to robocall you, especially on your cell phone, except the government has been allowed to collect debts if you owed the IRS some money.
This is one of the more popular laws on the books because people don't like cell phone robocalls. That seems just common sense. Do you want to argue against that common sense?
Brett Kavanaugh, writing the opinion in this case, said, look, collecting government debts may be a worthy goal, but Uncle Sam actually has to follow the same rules as everybody else. And if you want to collect that money, do it by mail or use a real person.
Like, actually dial some phone numbers. Just try it. Okay, so these are interesting. They're a little wonky, right? But what is next for the court, Devin? Like, what do you have your eye on? And just, like, when do they finish the term already? Please.
Yeah, I mean, we're all asking that question. They're normally done and gone by this point in July, Brad, as you said at the top. This is pretty unprecedented. We can thank the pandemic for that. And there are a couple biggies hanging out there. In the next few days, we are expecting to get a decision on whether employers can opt out of the Obamacare guarantee that women get no-cost contraceptive services in their health plans. Can employers raise a flag and opt out of that requirement?
The one side doesn't want it to work because they want to say the mandate is required, and the other side doesn't want it to work because they want to impose the mandate. Is it really the case that there is no way to resolve those differences?
The presidency is being harassed and undermined with improper process.
Also, of course, waiting to see whether President Trump is going to have to hand over thousands of financial documents and his tax returns to Congress and a New York prosecutor before the election.
You're asking for a broader immunity than anyone else gets.
Why should we not defer to the House's views about its own legislative purposes?
We will see whether the court upholds those subpoenas.
All right, Devin Dwyer in Washington, running ragged around the Supreme Court. Thank you so much, Devin.
It's a wild one, Brad. Thanks.
And one last thing. There was another notable ruling yesterday from a lower court, but could perhaps have an even bigger immediate impact.
This pipeline, we are the people.
Remember the Dakota Access Pipeline, the one that attracted huge protests, even sometimes violent ones, a few years ago? Well, that pipeline has now been pumping oil for the last 3 years. Well, now a federal judge says they have to stop almost immediately because of an environmental review that happened 3 years ago.
Right now, the Army Corps is examining whether there are ways to reroute.
Basically, in the final days of Barack Obama's presidency, the White House rejected these permits from Dakota Access. Donald Trump then came in and approved the permits.
This is with respect to the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline.
But a judge said they still needed to do a more thorough review of what would happen if this absolutely gigantic pipeline, stretching across a good chunk of the country right near the Missouri River, spilled. He now says the errors in this review are too big to ignore. The oil companies say they did everything they were asked to do, and that ironically, this could all result in oil being transported by railroad, which is not usually safer.
Railroads are not designed to move oil by rail at the volumes we're talking about.
They've asked for an emergency stay, either from this court or a higher one, to let them keep operating. But think about what a big deal this could be. North Dakota has become the nation's second biggest oil-producing state. This green light was a cornerstone cornerstone of President Trump's environmental policy. This review would take upwards of a year to prepare, and if it went badly, the whole project could be in jeopardy. Again, after running continuously for the last 3 years. You can file this under the heading, like, regardless of what you think, either side, you would not want this decision to take this long. All right, start here tomorrow. Check us out on your smart speaker if you can't find your earbuds. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.